maybe the Star of Bethlehem wasn't a star at all. It's time for the SAFTAcast, the only podcast that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, or publishing. I'm your host, Scott C. Episode 52 is here, as you no doubt guessed because you clicked on it because it said episode 52. And what an episode 52 we have for you. The one and the only A.D. Carson is with us on the program today. Poet, performance artist, musician, activist, and much, much more. We'll get into that in just a moment. Before we get to it, I always like to give you a little bit of podcast business, if you will, so to speak, a little news from the Sundress Academy for the Arts, etc. We kick it off with some news from us here at the SAFTAcast. We've been talking about it, and we're going to do a little bit more talking about it right now. We are looking for an intern. Yes, the deadline has come and passed, but we decided, because it was the end of the semester and it was busy for many people, listeners and personnel alike, to extend the deadline until May 20th, that is May 20, for information about becoming an intern here at the podcast. Visit our website at saftacast.com and click on Internship Opportunities, or visit sundresspublications.com/interns and send your applications in to us at saftacast@gmail.com. Once again, the deadline is May 20th, so get those in as soon as possible. Hey, speaking of late May, May 27th, we've talked about it before, we're going to talk about it right now, the SAFTA Poetry Retreat is taking place the weekend of May 27th through the 29th at Firefly Farms just outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. We've talked about it before, and there are some special guests and amazing people already signed up to be a part of this, including former SAFTAcast guest Corinna McGlynn, former SAFTAcast guest Aaron Elizabeth Smith, of course, and many more. But I will tell you once again that space is limited. In fact, they are almost out of space. So if you want to get in on this action and find out more information about it, visit sundresspublications.com/SAFTA, S-A-F-T-A, and click on Programs/Events. You can get all the details there on this wonderful opportunity to hang out at Firefly Farms and write poetry and learn from masters of the craft. And don't forget about the fiction retreat either. We'll talk about that in our next episode and remind you more about that. For now, though, I want to move ahead and talk about today's interview with A.D. Carson. As I said, man of many talents here. Musician, writer, activist, scholar, and just an all-around kick-ass person to chat with. It was an honor to chat with him on the program today, and it is an interesting interview, I will tell you that, as we talk about things such as his first encounter with Natasha Trethewey, about using hip-hop in the classroom, and the need for us as educators to listen to our students. But one thing we don't talk about on the episode, but I want to bring up right now, is that in addition to his own work, A.D. Carson is a leader of See the Stripes, a campaign at Clemson University that aims to raise student and public awareness at Clemson and beyond of the unspoken, unacknowledged, and overlooked contributions of African Americans to the college's history, as well as combating current spaces of intolerance, hatred, and racism that affect college life. This, my friends, is a most worthwhile effort, and I encourage you as our listeners to learn all about the See the Stripes project at cstripescu.org. That is C, S-E-E, Stripes, the letter C, the letter U, .org. For all the information, its purpose, its mission statement, as well as current news and events going on. And now, on to today's interview. But before we talk to AD, we gotta hear from our theme song. AD.
Hey, how's it going, Scott?
Hey, how's it going, man?
All right.
So welcome to the program, man.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
I always like to start our show off with the burning question that is on everyone's mind.
Okay.
And today's burning question is, you are engaged in mortal combat with a penguin. How
Okay.
do you come out victorious?
How do I come out victorious in Mortal Kombat with the penguin? First off, just hope that penguins are ticklish, and that would be my secret weapon. I would tickle the penguin to death.
That would work. Can someone be tickled to death?
You know what? This would probably be the first case. I don't know. I mean, if penguins are ticklish, then I imagine that, that they are perhaps ticklish to death.
Are you ticklish?
I don't think so.
What if the penguin decides to play it against you then?
You know what? I'd probably just play it cool, I mean, I would, put on the penguin face.
What? Now I'm trying to think, what is a penguin face exactly? Like stoicism?
Yeah, well, just really, really, really cool, I guess. I guess I was thinking like Outcast, Big Boy, the polar bear's toenails, but I don't know how that plays with the penguin.
Don't know either. You've got to have some kind of stoicism in an environment like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, are you a fan of freezing cold areas, or do you prefer the warmth of the southern life?
No, I do not like the warmth at all. Actually, I think that when it's cold, it's easier to put on layers, like when it's extremely hot, like there's only so far you can go.
Well, you've had kind of the best of both worlds then in your bio. You've had, the cold of Illinois and now the warmth of Alabama and Clemson.
Yeah, well, South Carolina, yeah,
Oh,
but
South
just,
Carolina, excuse me. I'm
yeah.
going to get a
But
lot of angry calls on that one.
the Yeah, well, Illinois, I think, is more interesting for me because I mean, like the snow days here, I think there was like 2 inches of snow a couple of years ago and everything was shut down for about a week. And Illinois, is 19 inches of snow and everything is open and people are looking at you oddly if you aren't able to drive in it.
Did you learn how to drive in that environment?
Oh, in the snow in Illinois?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a must. So here, I think that, folks who are from Illinois, even on days when there is, a dusting of snow, those are probably the only people who are out on the streets wondering why everything is closed.
I gotta ask, since I grew up in a snow environment as well, learning to drive, what tips do you have for people driving in snow?
If you're in the South, just don't attempt it because nobody else knows how. But you drive slowly. Again, that's I guess that's Kanye West there, but yeah, drive slow. I think that's the thing that you probably should take heed of is that there's no reason to try to speed in snow.
No, there is not. I can attest to that. I learned on a car with no brakes too, which helped.
Guess that's yeah, I guess that's more of a learning experience than I ever want to have.
Were you born in Illinois?
I was Central Illinois, right? In Decatur.
Were you downtown? Were you in the city, suburb, outside of Decatur, or right in the heart of Decatur?
Yeah, right in the heart of Decatur Memorial Hospital.
You stayed in Illinois for quite a long time, though.
Yeah, we moved up and down the state quite a bit. Just remember telling my mom not very long ago that up until my last 2 years of high school, we went to a different, or I went to a different school every year. A lot of jumping around.
Was that difficult, the jumping around as a child? Never being able to like grip and get your own group of friends together for very long?
That's it's a strange question. I guess it's normal for me because I didn't have anything that was other than that. So I guess I'm just kind of used to having to either try to make friends or, carrying the imaginary ones around with me.
You have a lot of imaginary friends as a kid? It's a strange question to ask, but
Well, yeah, I think the answer to that is yes. Or, I would have these tangible objects and, I would project personalities onto them. So, there are several pictures of me as a child with strings tied around, dolls, like I'm carrying them around, and in my mind they're my friends. In my mom's mind, there's something morbid brewing.
I guess as a parent, you learn to just kind of accept when children do strange stuff.
Yeah, I guess that is the case. My mom, she laughs about it now, and she always says, "I don't know what you thought you were doing," and I have to explain to her every time. I said, "Well, this is not. It didn't seem strange to me. I want my friends to be around me, so I take a piece of string or take a shoelace and tie one end around the doll and then the other end to my belt loop, and my buddies are just kind of like hanging from my belt loop."
Going with you wherever you go, man. You're the leader.
Exactly. Yeah.
Was it just you, or did you have siblings?
I have five brothers and two sisters, but primarily grew up with my immediately younger brother.
How much younger was he?
He's a year and a half younger than I am.
What were some of the best memories you have of Illinois?
I guess it was I mean, things that were not entirely fun when we were going through them down in, down in southern Illinois. We played a lot. My grandfather had a tractor that didn't really work, and so we would, we'd jump up on it and pretend that we were driving, or we would get, milk crates and cut the bottom out of it and nail it to a tree, and then, we'd have basketball. That was how I learned how to play basketball. It was on a milk crate. And so I think that it was really sort of the rural stuff that was really cool that happened down in southern Illinois that I remember with fondness. And then that also reminds me of my grandmother, who, she and uncles and aunts, they were in church just about every day. And we would pretend to be sick on church days so we could sit at home and watch whatever we wanted on television, because whenever my grandmother was at home, it was always tuned into to the Trinity Broadcast Network. So it was church all the time, and then at home church on TV.
So it was like a chance to steal the remote.
Exactly.
He's like, that's it, we're putting on cartoons.
Yeah.
Were you close to your grandparents?
Yes. Well, both my grandmothers are very, they were very lovely women. And so I have nothing but fond memories of both of them.
Sounds like you're tight with your family. Is that still the case as you've grown older?
Yeah, I guess primarily my brother and my mom I talk to just about every day or every other day. And then the rest of the family, we're kind of scattered about, but yeah, there is a an undeniable love there. Yeah.
What creates that love? Because I've talked to a lot of people who, have that distance from their family. They're just like, no, I don't want to talk about, half my family, basically. What do you think it is that creates this bond between family members?
Well, I think it's probably just the struggle, like having very little. When you don't have much, then at the very least you have one another. And so at the end of the day, it's us having one another's backs, and knowing that, that being the case since, as far back as anyone can remember.
It's born not necessarily out of necessity, but something else. Can it even be defined?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of strange because there are folks in the family who, I think about this sometimes. If we weren't related, I don't know if we would be friends. But since we are related, there's this love there, and then there's this, I guess, this desire to continue to, to interact and to, love one another or to be loving toward one another. And yeah, I don't know if there is a definition for that, because like I said, I have thought about that, who I choose to be friends with, and then the family that, that you're given.
What makes a good friend in your eyes? Like, what are the qualities that you would look for in someone to be your friend?
Well, that's a good question. I think that there has to be something that resembles honesty, regardless of, what feelings may come on the flip. So, on the underside of that, the people who are my friends are people who will tell me exactly what they think, how they feel. If something that I'm doing is not cool, then they'll definitely tell me that it's not cool. And I think that people who don't have those types of personalities are not people who I'm ever really drawn to.
Because I've wondered this question about my own life sometimes. Why are my friends my friends? What do I see in them?
Yeah, it's odd. And I think, well, maybe it probably also has something to do with with myself. Like, how much of myself do I see in these people? And I know that I'm the type of person who, I mean, I really do take pride in being able to be honest with people. And so if anyone can take that from me, and can dish that out, then of course, we've already we've gotten through most of the barriers we might have as people attempting to communicate with one another.
So honesty, compassion, fairness, it sounds like, almost like a sense of justice, give and take.
Yeah. And I think maybe even, sort of a desire to do stuff. I guess I was trying to think of a better way to say that, but I think that like doing stuff is probably a good way to say it. I don't have friends who don't do stuff.
Doing stuff as in just spending time with one another, or doing stuff as in instead of let's just sit down and watch a movie together, let's go out and do something active.
Well, like just being in the world to like whatever degree that may be. Like last night, a couple friends and myself, we went out to see the, I mean, it's kind of funny. It's, South Carolina, we go see a movie called Civil War with a character, called Black Panther. That was kind of funny to me. But it's 11 p.m. and hey, let's go do stuff. So we did. Then I guess it gets even, larger. There are other things going on in the world. And so, what can we do as, the individuals we are in whatever places we live to work toward, living in a better world? So the little things like going to watch movies, but the things that may be bigger, like trying to intervene in thinking about, these larger problems going on in the world.
So it's a combination then, really. It's like, I hadn't thought, by the way, of that Civil War aspect. Now that I'm thinking of, like, wait a minute, yeah. Oh, that is weird, now that I think of it. Yeah. As much as I haven't read it yet, but I'm really curious to read the new Black Panther comics with Ta-Nehisi Coates as the writer on it.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's great. I just read it last week when took a trip out to Baltimore and I came back and it was at my front door, so.
I'm excited. I haven't gotten to the comic shop yet to check it out. Maybe Marvel is trying, I'll give them marks for trying at least to make this a little more diverse in the comics world.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the nerd in me speaking, but also the one who goes, wait a minute, this is bullshit. Anyway, no, I think that's a good way of putting it, is to do stuff, the small stuff and the large stuff, Having grown up moving around a lot and everything, do you find now that you surround yourself with a lot of friends? Do you like to have a large group of friends, or do you still keep it very intimate, like a tight circle?
Yeah, I think that my circle is pretty close. I try my best to be as, yeah, I try to be open and welcoming. I guess open to meeting people and to getting to know people. But it seems that the people that I'm really close with, I mean, it's strange that, like my cell phone kind of gives me the top five folks that I talk to. And two of those, like I said, is it's my mom and my brother, and then some other folks who I do speak to on a regular basis, but it's never more than five people, and they don't rotate very often.
It's like, yeah, I have a large amount of acquaintances, but a close group of friends. Back to Illinois for a second here. I know, I feel like I'm jumping around here.
Oh no, it's all good.
What made you want to stay there and go to college?
Well, initially, what well, I was going to go to I was going to go to college in Illinois regardless, but I started off over at Eastern and I thought that I would go all the way through there, and music was just it was such a big deal in my life that I didn't want to go too far away from home to sort of remove that as something that I was able to do, and the people that were involved in my music life were all there. So going anywhere too far would really take me away from what that ultimate dream. And so ultimately what kept me in Illinois was music.
I know that music is a huge part of your bio, no matter where you look. You search out A.D. Carson, that you find writer and musician. So let's dive right in on it. When did you get the bug to go into music? When did it start? Was it always there from childhood with mom's records, or where does it start?
I think it was, yeah, very, very young. My dad grew up with a father who's a musician, and so then my dad is a musician. He and his siblings, they had a band when we were really young. My siblings and I, I think my dad used to call us Captain Crunch and the Funky Bunch, and he used to try to get us to put together these routines, these songs that he would write. And so it started really early. And I think that for me, I guess I kind of went into something a little different than my pop's vision for Captain Crunch and the Funky Bunch. But we're still trained up.
When did the shift to hip hop come then? You mentioned, like, grew up in one style, but then, you go off in a different direction than what dad might have expected.
I guess the influences were there early, but I think that as I started to get into poetry and then seeing some of my favorite poets or hearing in some of my favorite poets what we know to be hip hop lyrics or like something that is akin to rap, it just made sense naturally that I would be start writing rap lyrics as opposed to something else.
So how did you go into the music business then? How old were you first? Let's start there.
I think I recorded my first song when I was probably 13 or 14. It was in a friend had, he had a computer set up, and at least that was the first time that it felt professional. Before then, I think that I'd saved up some money and I bought a karaoke machine with the cassette tape, and I would record to old instrumentals. So, you have like a Wu-Tang Clan, instrumental, portion or something like that, or you get the single, the maxi single that has the four, it has the four tracks and two of them are instrumentals, and then I would record my versions of whatever songs, to those.
Freestyle combined with maybe some things you've written down.
Yeah.
It must have been the way it sounds, it must have been addictive after that first recording.
Yeah, it was just, well, to hear my own voice on a tape the same way that I would hear other people's voices. Yeah, it was definitely something that I wanted to continue to do, but then it was also just like it was a release. It was a great way to really, I don't know, that you in conversation, your words, they kind of come out, they do whatever they do, and then they disappear. But with recording, they're kind of permanent. You say it and you can rewind it and play it back. If people like it, even if they don't like it, they still have the opportunity to listen again. If they don't understand it, they can listen again. There's a permanence to the recorded voice, I guess, that doesn't exist in some conversations.
There's also an artificialness to it because it can be edited and mutated and modified.
Yes, that's very true.
Listeners don't realize that, for example, 3 minutes has been cut out of the episode and that, a 30-second section from, 50 minutes in has been moved to the 35 mark.
Yeah, it's kind of like magic.
Be careful sometimes, especially now with the level of scrutiny, like everything is recorded everywhere.
That's true. Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen with politics in like 20 years.
If this year is any example, I don't even really want to think about, or will we even have 20 years?
Good question. I'm wondering that myself. But now it's something I bring up with students. I'm like, we hear about these scandals now. Oh no, he sent a scandalous text message. I'm like, wait 20 years when the kids of today are at the level where they can start running for office.
Oh yeah.
Nobody's going to care anymore. Oh, you had a scandalous MySpace profile. Whoopee.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe the case will be you never had a MySpace account. What's wrong with you? And you're disqualified from politics because you don't have a social media profile that we can investigate.
You weren't on Facebook.
Yeah.
But back to the whole music thing. How many releases did you put out? I mean, well, during that period, let's say, because I know it isn't over.
Yeah, there were, I guess, I really don't know the number. But there were maybe three or four while I was an undergrad, and then there was a couple during my master's program, and since I've been at Clemson, I've recorded, six different projects and working on another. And my dissertation will be a recorded project as well. So, all of those things, I guess it sort of has progressed, and now it is my academic work is the work that started out a long time ago as just sort of a hobby, a way to release. It's now the way that I do my so-called academic research, or at least the output of the academic research.
How did that happen? Because that's like absolutely fascinating.
Well, the entire time I've always had this issue in classes about, well, I guess it's just I would feel like skeptical about everything, and then asked to present, research or to do it, to write a paper. I would always, in fourth grade when we were asked to write a paragraph, I asked my teacher, can I write it as a rhyming paragraph? And the teacher says yes. And so from there, I start writing poetry rather than writing paragraphs. And I think that same kind of question kept coming up. And the further along I got into the academic career, the more likely it was that no one would say no And so now, you know, I mean, at this stage where there's a you know, a PhD is on the line and there's a dissertation that needs to be written, I guess the prospectus was a far more detailed way of asking my committee if it would be okay if I submitted my responses in rhymes. And ultimately they said yes.
So it sounds like it starts off as an experiment to test the boundaries, but then became the primary mode of communication.
Exactly. Yes, that is the truth.
Because I've watched a few of what would I call them? Chapters on the dissertation that are on YouTube, and I'm like, this is brilliant.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a learning experience, but I guess this is what, you know, what we're hoping happens when you engage in, you know, this academic world. It's supposed to, you know, challenge you while you challenge it. And so I've learned a lot about myself and learned a lot about the world, but also just kind of learned about how, you know, I guess how I need to design rhymes in order to convey particular messages, so that they're understood by people who may or may not dig rap or hip hop.
Something that comes up a lot in my classroom, especially when we start talking about poetry and such, and I would love your thoughts on this. Why is it that college academia seems reluctant to embrace hip hop in the English classroom?
You know, I think that maybe it has something to do with control, because I don't know that the instructors, or even, you know, like the scholars, the so-called hip hop scholars, are as well. I mean, you know, I imagine that they're definitely equipped to talk about the music, but when we talk about composition and we talk about dissemination, you know, access, I think, is altered when we say that the folks who create these particular types of messages in this particular type of way should be seen as the scholars. Because when that happens, then, you know, like, it kind of opens the floodgates for folks like myself, or, you know, or folks like, you know, 17-year-old Jay-Z or 17-year-old Nas to go to places like, you know, Harvard and Stanford and engage in this academic world. And so I think that it has everything to do with who has access to, you know, these prestigious places. And so that reluctance, I think it serves a purpose. And I think that that purpose is to, you know, keep the, you know, that gateway fairly narrow.
I was about to say, it sounds like a gatekeeping mechanism.
Yeah. And so we have that, you know, at those places that I mentioned, we have, you know, hip hop fellowships, or we have hip hop archives. And you know, they're wonderful things, but, you know, those individuals like Nas and Jay-Z or Ninth Wonder or Bun B, these people, after they're famous, of course, they have access to go there and guest lecture, or, you know, to you know, make a nice headline. But we talk about the unknown rapper, you know, who's 14 years old writing her first rhymes. You know, what about her ability to go into the academy as an MC? Does she have access? And I think the answer right now is no. But I would love for that answer to change. And so she doesn't have to envision herself as something other than an MC in order to participate in the scholarly world. But she, because she's an MC, she has an opportunity to go and study at, you know, one of these prestigious universities that has one of these fellowships. That's my vision.
It would be amazing. And maybe this is part also of the long-standing debate of are lyrics poetry?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't even know if that is much of a, I mean, I know that people debate it, but I think that we've kind of come to accept that as being as true as it needs to be for us to move forward to other, you know, more pressing questions. And so I kind of wonder sometimes, even when, you know, when I come against that question, when people ask about my academic work, you know, I don't know that it's revolutionary that, you know, someone does philosophy, so to speak, in rhymed verse.
There's a lot of philosophy in rap.
Yeah.
One need only listen to, say, KRS-One. But I think you're right. There is a gatekeeping. There's a fear, I think, a fear of it.
Yeah, I think that and maybe the fear is, you know, like, misunderstanding from the front of the classroom, the ways that the language shifts and it evolves so quickly that maybe some of our instructors or administrators don't see themselves as sufficiently equipped to evolve with the language that is really fueling hip hop. And for that reason, it's best to sort of keep it, you know, on the outside or keep it at the margins. So we can bring it in when we want to talk about other things. You know, we can, you know, the way that I've spoken about it is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if rap is dope, you know, and rappers, you know, they aspire to dopeness, then the way that we use it now in the academy is that we kind of take the dope and then we cut it with, you know, with literature or with rhetoric or with sociology, but we never really accept the dope in itself, you know, in its rawest form, as Common would call it, hip hop in its essence and real. We haven't done that yet. And that's what I'm looking forward to is, you know, sort of the dope on its own.
So the ones who use it are looking at it in conversation with other pieces or other
Yeah,
schools of thought.
exactly. No, it's effective. I think that it works, and I think that it has the same effect, you know, as we think about, you know, I mean, it's a diluting agent so that it can be taken and understood. So I think that it's great to introduce people who love Nikki Giovanni to Tupac by way of her, or, you know, people who love Tupac to Nikki Giovanni, you know, in the same kind of way. It has been effective. I just so happen to think that we could probably just bring in someone like Elzai or J Electronica and treat their work on its own as scholarship, and our students would be sufficiently served.
Yeah, this may work for now, this conversation, but eventually the dream is to we really should just have hip hop as its own study in conversation with itself.
Yes, that's my dream. I guess a really interesting thing to look forward to. You know, amongst my small circle of friends, that's kind of how we get along. We talk about, you know, the records that are out and what they're doing and what they mean in relation to other records and other things that might be going on in the world.
What right now in the world of hip hop is catching fire? Because you know I'm exposed, many of my students are exposed to the mainstream, what mainstream media gives us and says, oh, say five artists. What are some of the hot things right now in hip hop beyond, say, mainstream MTV world?
Well, I'm really interested in you know, someone like, say, Royce da 5'9", who is you know, a remarkable MC who's just released a record that I think people could probably learn quite a bit from, just, you know, his talent. I guess you'll probably hear the ways that he's influenced and been influenced by Eminem. But even Kendrick Lamar's work, while he's a very popular artist, I don't know that popular audiences are engaging with his work in a way that does it the kind of justice that it needs, or, you know, giving it the scholarly attention that it merits. I'm thinking particularly, you know, he just released I mean, he had an album, and then he had this Untitled Unmastered project that came out right after it. But there are other people like Big Crit, who is another remarkable artist that, you know, I'm surprised I don't hear a lot more people talking about. Rhapsody, who's from North Carolina, she's an, I don't know, just like an amazing talent as an MC. And again, I don't hear as many people talking her up, but I think they need to be. I mean, because I don't know, she's got it. Chance the Rapper, I think that he's also another amazing MC who's got a new project coming out really soon.
I'm going to be on YouTube tonight. I can guarantee you searching out a bunch of this stuff. I guarantee you. So I'm always looking for something that's going to, grab me. And like after the Grammys, I became more aware of Kendrick. And I was like, holy shit, he's lobbing fire. This is great.
Yeah, his project, or, you know, the those lab these projects have these textures, these layers that really work, especially for the, you know, the college classroom. If many of your students are listening to popular music, I think that a great way to get into some of the stuff that we're talking about. So we may not have the ability right now to just do a hip hop course, but because we do have, you know, an obligation to teach, I think that we can do whatever we can to be more effective about that. And so Kendrick provides, I think, a lot of assistance for instructors. And I imagine that J. Cole does the same thing. He has this really, I don't know, it's really cool work that can bring up some of the more difficult conversations that we find ourselves needing to engage our students in.
What advice could you give someone who wants to use hip hop in their classroom? How should they go about it?
You know, I think that something effective for me is asking students what they're listening to. And after we know what the students are listening to, then, you know, we can kind of, you know, gather that, listen to the music, and then we have the ability to kind of cross-reference that with what we want to be teaching or what we are tasked with teaching for a particular semester. But I do a soundtrack list just about every semester with each of my classes. And we start from, you know, like popular songs for the current year, the previous year, you know, going all the way back about 10 years. And those are sort of sourced from the entire class. And then, I mean, this is, so it's a collective reading list of, you know, 10 to 12 songs that we all know and we all kind of understand. If we can cross-reference that with whatever we might be reading or whatever we might be studying, then I think that it makes for pretty cool conversations.
So the first step is really to just listen to our students. What's on their radar right now?
Yes.
It feels like we do have to keep in conversation with other things right now, as you were saying, before we can shift it to its own world. I think it would be awesome to have courses on Jay-Z like we have courses now on Harry Potter and such.
Yeah, and I think that that's, you know, it's a thing. I mean, you see it happening here and there, but, you know, I imagine that it'll become more popular. Or even, you know, something like a hip-hop composition course where instead of us doing, you know, like a traditional composition or a traditional, you know, like argument class, you know, we have, you know, a composition course where students are tasked with writing, you know, mixtape over the course of a semester rather than writing five essays. You know, you write five songs.
Write the rhymes down for five tracks. You know,
yeah.
This one has to be compare and contrast of two things. And
yep.
This one has to be a descriptive one. You know, use all your powers of description for this one.
Yeah. And I think that though that would be, well, you know, that would be a dope course. I know that I would love to take that course. I'd love to teach that course or just sit in. I want to be around that course no matter what, you know, what I get to do with regard to the teaching and learning of it. I definitely want to be involved.
I'm surprised now that you're describing it, I'm surprised this hasn't happened yet.
Well, my hope is that if it hasn't by the time I get the opportunity to do so, then, you know, that'll be the thing that I actually do in my classroom.
And I hope others do as well, you know, cause, I mean, it is worthy of study. It's worthy of scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
I find it kind of interesting you bring up Rhapsody out of North Carolina,
uh-huh.
Because I got a couple of listener questions here that we solicited from our listeners. We do this occasionally. We like to throw listener questions at our guest.
Okay.
And the first one we have is, let me look over here. All it said was, best female rapper, ? So I'm going to put this in two ways, best one currently and then best of all time.
Huh. Well, yeah, I think that, you know, I'm going to give I'll give Rhapsody current hands down of all time. I am probably going to say Lauryn Hill.
Nice choice.
Yeah.
Why Lauryn?
I think that she just, you know, like has a complexity as an MC, as an artist that many MCs who have talent, you know, who are witty, you know, wordplay, punchlines, you know, all these things. But Lauryn Hill had that and a whole lot more. So I think that I would just have to, I'd have to give it to her because of her just poetic genius.
Is that what attracts you to a good MC, is complexity?
Well, it's not just complexity. I think that it's really just the, you know, sort of the fulfillment of certain expectations, the denial of some of those expectations, the ability to keep a listener guessing and interested at the same time. And I think that Lauryn Hill had that. I know that listening to the Miseducation album, it was definitely not what I expected. And I think that there are ways that when you don't get what you expect, you are disappointed. But in that particular case, her not fulfilling those expectations made it all the better because she gave me something I didn't know that I wanted until it was presented. And then I realized that, you know, she like made a new thing exist in my mind as a consumer and fan of hip hop music.
Best artists do that. You come away realizing, how did I live without hearing this?
Exactly.
If you don't do that every 6 months in your life, then something's wrong.
Yeah.
Next listener question we have, it's a great answer too, because I don't know who I would pick, but that's Lauryn Hill, good choice. Second listener question we got is, what is your favorite piece of clothing?
My favorite piece of clothing is probably a ball cap. You know, I am a fan of the fitted cap, so that's a pretty easy one to answer.
I didn't know if that was referring to your own wardrobe or to others, so I'm just going to go with it.
Okay. Yeah.
Fitted ball cap works for me. Let's see. I know we got one more here. I'm just pulling up. There we go. Have you ever freaked out when meeting a writer?
Yes. Yes, I can say that I have. Natasha Trethewey was here at Clemson a little while ago. Maybe it wasn't last year. It was the year before last. And I had it in my mind that I'm going to propose to Natasha Trethewey. This is the way that it's going to go. And so as people start lining up, I'd already had had a copy of one of her books, but I was going to have to buy another copy of the book in order to get her autograph, in order to start the conversation with her, to be able to ask her if she would marry me, and if not, maybe go out on a date. So I waited. I was the very last person in line. And then I heard her say to the person right in front of me that she was extremely tired and she was ready for the evening to be over. And so I thought, you know what? Like, she's really tired. I know she probably doesn't want to hear my proposal now. So I just asked her to sign the book and then pose for a picture with her. And then it was over. And, you know, I held my, you know, head down in shame because I didn't ask the question that I'd waited all evening to ask.
I wonder if she would have said yes.
I don't know. It would have been, I mean, I guess it would have just been, it would have been worth being told no. But, you know, I lost the courage in the last moment. Then I saw her in an airport because she was on the same flight with me, you know, just a couple weeks later, and still didn't have it. So
it takes a lot of self-discipline to keep control from freaking out over seeing, you know, say one of your idols or role models.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Nikki Giovanni as well. You know, she's just every time I see her, anytime that I've had an opportunity to even say something to her, I never get the opportunity to say what I want. It's just like all kinds of stuff comes out and I'm just not in control.
Just gibberish comes out. You know, I've had that sign.
Like, yeah, you write poems, good poems.
Me like words. You write words. Have you ever had a musical artist encounter like that?
No, you know, honestly, I have not. I have met some of my favorite artists, but I don't think that I've ever really freaked out when meeting them. It has always kind of been, I guess, just like as a musician, I guess as an MC, you just carry with you this idea that you're an MC, I'm an MC. I think probably in my mind, I'm always ready, like, hey, you know, let's go verse for verse, see how this turns out. So, but I'm never thinking that way when I meet, you know, a novelist or a poet that, you know, like, let's see who has the best, you know, the most prosaic paragraph. I think with rap, there's just this kind of competition, this ethos that exists in the world that makes you always feel in competition, even with someone who is, you know, like who you admire so much.
I think writing needs to have that aspect of like two poets meeting each other and going, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Like a poet showdown.
I mean, we see it sure in slam poetry, but I feel like it needs to happen almost all the time.
Yeah. I, you know, maybe there's something cool that could come from like the standoff between two poets, you know, like at the moment they see each other, you know, kind of, you know, they narrow their eyes and then, you know, like sort of, you know, throw poems at one another. It'd be kind of cool.
I mean, I kind of see it maybe at open mic nights where like, well, this poem is written for the guy last week who, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see two poets go at it on a stage.
Yeah.
I'd pay for it.
Oh, I would too. I'm definitely there for that.
Now we can get into the great theoretical, like, best matchups, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all right, let's put this one up against this one. Not a fair fight, you know. Go to the tail of the tape here, you know. Well, I don't know. You know, he's got a 60-inch wingspan. Let me touch on, because we got, you know, all over the place here. How did you come from Illinois to Clemson in South Carolina?
I was actually working. So I was in Illinois. I was teaching and working in an after school program, and I was a writer in residence for Quiddity Journal. And I saw somewhere something about Clemson's rhetorics, communication, and information design program. And I sent an email out to the director of the program, telling him exactly what I did in Illinois, you know, working in those jobs, and you know, also hosting some open mic stuff and trying to do art in the community, and just kind of told him how I thought those things matched up with the program's description, and he agreed that it did match up, and that you know, I should really seriously consider applying, and so. From there, it seemed to be like a pretty quick process of transitioning from being in Springfield to coming down here to Clemson and then doing this program. And the same kinds of work that I did in Springfield, I started almost immediately down here in Clemson.
What were you doing in the as a school assistant in Illinois?
Well, the idea of empowering young folks with well, with language, you know, with poetry, trying to look at poetry as a way of, you know, resisting against these things that we know to be unjust or unequal, or to, you know, sort of affirmatively state that, you know, that I am here, I exist, and, you know, I should be listened to because, you know, my voice matters. And it seemed to be a thing that was not going on nearly as much as it should be. And so that was really what the, you know, what I tried to do in the after school program. And also what I attempted to do in the work with Quiddity, just kind of thinking about poetry out loud and, you know, like rap on the page and in ways that we could use those things in order to empower people in the community.
I've noticed from my own experience, I know anecdotes aren't data, but I've noticed the same thing, is that a lot of students, especially teenagers, K through 12, are given this impression their voice doesn't matter. There's no point.
Yeah. I guess I disagree with that, you know, with that way of teaching. I disagree with that as something that, that teachers would sort of push forward onto young people, especially if at some point we expect for young people to step up and do the work that, that is going to be needed for us to have progress, that we disempower all the way to the point that we are all the way to the point that they need to be empowered. And then we expect that they automatically just sort of know how to do it now. And so I guess I just kind of take a different route and as early as possible, try to get, you know, the people who are around me thinking about how they can use their own voices, you know, for the kinds of work that they feel needs to be done wherever they are.
I'm speaking as a member of Gen X. We fucked up, you know.
Yeah.
It's on the young ones now.
Yeah.
We were taught as Gen Xers that slackers would take over, and it didn't work out for us. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I'm totally in line with you on that. Of we need to give, they need to understand. No, your voice does matter, especially now.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the clock, and it's like, this hour went by pretty quickly, especially when we started talking about hip hop and music.
Oh yeah.
as I knew it would, because, you know, it's a great topic to discuss with anyone. But before we let you go, before we call it a show, I got to know, what's coming up for you? What's coming down? Work coming out? What's coming down the pike? What are you working on these days?
I'm now doing I'm finishing up this Term 6 mixtape. I've done one for each term that I've been at Clemson, and they're all free and downloadable from my website. It's adthegreat.com. It's A-Y-D-E-E, the great. And really just working on polishing up the dissertation project, which will feature pieces from those mixtapes. And then, you know, working on some other writing we'll hopefully detail some of the time that has passed here at Clemson, but just trying to write as much music as I possibly can, and yeah, hoping that people will engage with it, make sure that other folks are, like sort of engage with it, and then just spread it out there to other people. But that's pretty much what I'm doing now, is working on as much music as I can so I can finish up the PhD and then get to doing some teaching in other places.
You mentioned the website and everything, and definitely some cool shit there you can check out, including some of the videos for those tracks as well.
Yeah.
Where else can folks find you online? They want to check out more of your stuff. Is it just the website? I know you're all over social media.
Yeah, you can get well, I guess, yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's also AD the Great, Instagram, Facebook. Most of those are connected through my website, though.
The website acts as the hub then for all
Yep.
things.
Yep, pretty much.
I encourage our listeners to go check out some of your work there, especially the mixtapes. They are amazing to listen to.
I appreciate that.
They are fun. AD, it has been a pleasure chatting with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Scott. I really do appreciate you having me on, and it's been my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for us as well, and we look forward to seeing what you're going to drop next and everything, and see if this prophecy comes true that hip hop will be more embraced in the classroom as its own subject.
Yeah, we will see.
We will see, and I encourage my colleagues to go out there and use it in the classroom. Nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, and if you have questions, email me. I'm always up for it, like the challenge, the strong challenge. We'll see how that goes.
AD, it has been a pleasure, man. Take care.
All right, thank you so much. You too.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.